Warning, this is the Freedom Fiends midweek non-radio podcast. Unlike our weekend live talk radio shows, where we adhere to all regulations and community standards, this cast may contain cussing and or prurient subject matter. If you are easily offended, please leave now. But tune in Saturdays and Sundays to our live talk radio show. If you're not easily offended, prepare to be entertained, informed, and enlightened.
This is the Central Scrutinizer. We're working very hard to spend your tax money to keep you from hearing things like freedomfiends.com.
We are rolling.
All right.
Hey, Nima Vidati, yep. You Freedom Fiend. How you doing?
Me. Good.
Me.
You?
Good. We just designed new, I just designed and you approved a new button design because the Anarchy Gumbo is no more, and that's my announcement. There's no more Anarchy Gumbo. I podfaded.
Bam!
I podfaded, but you know, I never promised anything with that free audio I worked so hard to provide and 48 episodes of, something like that. And, you know, it came to an end because I'm too busy with the Fiend, so there's no more Gumbo. But
Fader.
Fader, yeah.
We still do interviews. Fiends interviews on the radio.
They're just only famous people now on the radio. Yep. I was going to do a last gumbo with Ben Quaker because I did the first one with him, but he's on the road and it's hard to record him and get stuff to the internet. And he's still at Porkfest and he's a big part of what we're going to talk about today.
Still at Porkfest?
Yeah.
He doesn't want to leave, does he?
No, he's waiting.
Is there still a fest?
No, man. He and his wife drive around the country in a van solving mysteries. Like what's that TV show when I was a kid? Scooby-Doo. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they're camping. You know, they're like, there's a campground here. Everyone left and I'm no longer a great man to the eyes of the masses in person, but I'll sit here and camp. And have fun.
Yeah. Same campground doesn't get boring after more than a week.
I don't know, man. Old people. There's new squirrels everywhere to watch.
Okay. You know, blame it on the squirrels.
In Ben's Porkfest thing, he actually talked about squirrels and not just, hey, there's squirrels. He like dropped mad squirrel science as like talking about liberty. He was like, well, there's this kind of squirrels and that kind of squirrels. Did you hear it?
He does that with squirrels and he does it with birds. Yeah, I didn't hear it in the Porkfest speech. I listened to a lot of it, but I didn't. Yeah. I missed the squirrel part. But I've heard his rants on different types of birds and how different species of birds have different natural laws and different species of birds will adapt differently to new situations and the difference between adaptations and of course their natures.
And he used it to extrapolate on human nature. And it was great. It was really good. I loved a lot about it. I really hated something about that speech and you didn't really hate it, but we're going to talk about that today. But there was one thing I really loved in that was a quote, and I'm paraphrasing because this is actually a shortening of a longer thing he said, but this was at the beginning and the end of it, and it was the nut of it. Statism is the idea that doing bad can produce good, and that's close enough to what he said and how he said it that I think that should be a t-shirt somewhere. Ben Stone said that.
And that's the nut of it, and that's the simplistic or the simplest way to put it to where everybody can understand it, I think. I mean, I try to go off often on, it's the non-aggression principle, and statism is believing that some people are able to violate the non-aggression principle. That's too many syllables. It's better the way Ben says it.
Yep, and he also, I really liked his assertion that Christ was anti-state, so the state is, and he like let you fill in the blank,
but Antichrist.
Yeah, I really like that a lot. And what else did I really like a lot about it? He just really drove it home. He said a few things I really didn't like, and I want to talk about them. One was it kind of picked my brain. I went very early on in it where he said it's okay to steal books from public libraries because it's not violating the non-aggression principle. Now, I have never even considered, and later, basically what I'm getting at is later at the end of it, he said, it's not violating the non-aggression principle to blow up government buildings. I had a real problem with that. Now, I don't know that necessarily isn't violating the non-aggression principle, but I've never even considered it. I would never even think of doing anything to government property. And this isn't just because the central scrutinizer's listening. I mean, I know they're listening, but it's like, it shocked me that he said that. And I'm
well, you used to walk with me when I would walk my dog in downtown Casper, and my dog would poop on the library lawn, and I would say, nobody owns it. And you were like, oh, okay.
I thought it was funny. I wouldn't do it. And I guess you're saying it's a matter of degrees of leaving dog poop to blowing things up. It's not two different things. Man, I don't know. Here's what I think.
I think the concept of property, but go ahead and explain your point.
I think it's a bad thing to even say out loud, think out loud, put out into the liberty movement, let alone say to a standing room only group of people who are mesmerized with you and get applause, which he did. Apparently he felt bad about it or wrong about it because he called me up this morning and said, Michael, I did something wrong. And I'm like, yeah, you did. It's the last 10 minutes of your speech, 5 minutes of your speech at Porkfest. And he's like, exactly. Like, it bugged him and it bugged me. So maybe you think it was okay. But if the guy who said it and the guy who's really close to him and listens to him all the time and talks to him all the time on the phone thinks there was something wrong with it, there's probably something wrong with it. And he's actually recording a podcast today that isn't not necessarily a retraction, but an explanation. And what happened was he said something, he took something out of context from a previous episode he did where he was talking about how it is violating the non-aggression principle to kill government employees. And, you know, there's people talking about that. There's people out in the world.
If you're killing them just because they're government employees. Now, if a government employee breaks into your house, let's say they're not in a uniform, but if some government employee kicks in your door and he just happens to be a government employee, then it would not violate the non-aggression principle to defend yourself.
You'd probably still get killed
but
or killed.
Go out
to
target people.
You'd probably still get killed or go to prison. But you wouldn't even know, man. That's self-defense. And any government employee worth his salt would probably do the same thing if someone broke into his house. But there's a lot of saber rattling and it's time for another American Revolution. Jefferson wanted it. Watering the Tree of Liberty. There's a lot of talk like that now, man. And it disgusts me. It is not the way to go. It ain't going to work. You know, on the Fiends, we tend to attack everything that's wrong from two viewpoints. One is the moral viewpoint, and the one is the it won't work viewpoint. We attack the Constitution on both of them. The Constitution, and we have a new meme, it's going to be a new button, is that the Constitution is written on sheep because it's actually written on sheepskin. So it's by sheep. And Ben came
by
up.
By sheeple, for sheeple.
No, by sheep.
And written.
I was telling Ben about this, and he came up with the line, by sheep, for sheep, on sheep. And that's going to be the button.
Yeah.
So, but we like to attack things on the Fiends that are wrong from both the moral standpoint and the it won't work standpoint. And I can attack any idea of going after people on the moral standpoint. And we did a really good job of attacking it on the it won't work standpoint the other day because the Yippies tried it in the 60s and it led to drones over our houses. And the moral aspect, it's violating the non-aggression principle. The same thing with destroying government property. I don't feel it's moral. I don't even need to analyze it with the non-aggression principle. I'm not a book thumper with the non-aggression principle. I don't break it, but I don't know. I also don't look for loopholes in it and go like, where can I get away with something and still call, you know?
It's not a loophole, but you're completely right to come at it from this angle. I'll agree with you on the practical angle. It probably wasn't a good idea for Ben to say something like that. And it's definitely not a good idea to go out and have an active campaign of destroying government property. That's a horrible idea. Ben did say as much, though. The last words of his speech were,
they'll kill you anyway.
You probably shouldn't do it because they'll kill you anyway.
Yeah, and he laughed and it got a laugh. And here's what I'm thinking. Picture the person who's attending their first Pork Fest isn't really sure about it. A friend of them brought them, and they're sitting in the back of that room, and that's what they hear. And everybody says, this guy is a great bastion of liberty. And what they heard is, this guy just said, blow up, you know, it's okay to blow up government property. I'm not into this liberty stuff. And I think Ben and I said this morning on the phone, we talked for a long time, we think we're to the point where we have to actually think about the responsibility of what we say and how it affects people. You know, idiots can take it the wrong way, but we have to think about how the average person hearing it for the first time out of context might feel. And that's a weird responsibility kind of thing.
Right. That's true. That's true.
I also think
also goes to show you that the non-aggression principle isn't the only measurement you need to take with
regards
to any action.
Exactly.
It's an important one. I would argue it's probably the most important one, especially in certain contexts. But it's not the only one by any means.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, also think about I'm getting a little echo back in your headphones there. Is there a reason for that? Do you know why that is? Is that on my end?
Shouldn't
is that
be.
On your end? Anyway, so
I don't know.
I guess it's because you're not talking and I'm just talking, and usually we're talking. I should let you talk more. Then no one will hear the echo. So,
well, it was your turn, so don't use your turn to talk about echo. Use your turn to talk about liberty.
All right. So the echo of liberty ringing true throughout the land. Ben told me that what happened, and I said, you know, what I think happened was you did this great slam dunk speech. You should have dropped the mic, said, thank you, good night, I'm here all week, and walked out to your campsite. That would have been great if he'd done that about 5-10 minutes earlier before he went into this whole, it might have been 3 minutes, the whole government thing at the end, because he was done. He was done and had done a complete piece, a complete, like, you could etch this in stone, great man speech kind of thing. But he got off on the high. He said, I was high on the being a great man, and he feels bad about it because he rails at the great man theory. Now, the thing
power
is,
power corrupts even Ben
does,
Stone.
It
apparently.
Does, and I don't really have a problem with this because I was in a rock band, went through that, had, you know, thousands of people, hundreds of people here and there all the time in different countries and states cheering at me in my face, young ladies throwing themselves at me, people giving me drugs, people giving me money, people giving me checks for my music. I did that for a decade, man. I was like, I lived it, and, you know, ended up alone, broke, and in a cold room by myself. And I see where that can lead, and it doesn't sustain, and it's not really fake. It's just temporary, and it ain't that real. It's just, you know, and the reason I know it's not real is I was doing that playing in my original bands that were, you know, mind bending, great original music. But then on the side, for fun, I played in some cover bands, and you get a similar response in cover bands playing, you know, old standards. And it's like, that just proves it's just sheep, you know, for the most part. Not saying the people at Porkfest are sheep, but just saying there's a crowd response thing where when you do it right and work a crowd like Ben did, they go, yes, you are great. And you get high on it and you want to give them more. And what he did was he pulled out a tiny little bit out of context in his mind that was like, oh yeah, that's good too, from this like 12 part really well thought out series he's doing, and it didn't work out of context, and it had the opposite meaning out of context to people. I also think about the government official that was probably sitting in that room taking notes. I think there are those at Porkfest. I think about
if they're in your mosques, they're at Porkfest.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, Ian's, you know, there's a guy facing prison because he wouldn't wear a wire into Ian's house. That's fact. You know, so I'm sure they're at Porkfest.
I think Rich Paul was convicted, wasn't he? It wasn't the horrible conviction that he was intended to get or offered, not offered, but threatened with. But I think he got like a year or something. But yeah, you're right. They tried, the FBI or whoever goons tried to get him to wear a wire into Ian's house.
Yeah.
That's how much they desire to spy on the Porkfest and the New Hampshire
and
people.
And you don't need to threaten anyone to get into Porkfest. You buy a ticket and walk in the door, man. You walk into the campground. Yep. I'm sure they were there. Or think about how a journalist trying to put down the Liberty Movement could have taken a soundbite, video or audio of that bit and put it on the news, you know?
Oh yeah.
I've always thought like, well, fuck you. I'm not a motherfucking role model. You know, like that line in the NWA song, you know, I drink straight out the 8-bottle. Do I look like a motherfucking role model? But I'm starting to think like, if people are, we're getting an audience to where people are looking at us in that way, I think we really have to have some responsibility. As square as that sounds, man, I think I have to start thinking more about what comes out my mouth. I hate it, but it's a thing, you know?
Right. Okay. I'll buy that. So you're not philosophically saying Ben was wrong. You're saying that practically it wasn't a smart statement to make, especially with the given context.
Yeah. Now, the bigger picture of this whole thing is I have become a centrist in the Liberty Movement, which is pretty bizarre to me. you know, on the one hand, Ben shocked me and I was like, that goes too far. And on the other hand, the whole Ian Freeman scenario yesterday on Free Talk Live made me go, man, Ian doesn't go far enough. And I don't know if you know about this, but basically Ian woke up yesterday morning early, like 4:30 in the morning. There was a guy he didn't know sitting in his living room in his radio studio, drunk, and had trashed the place, and Ian had never seen the guy in his life. Ian's response was, hi, who are you? And, oh, by the way, I'm sorry, I'm in my underwear. My response would have been pointing a gun at the guy and said, who the fuck are you? Let me see your fucking hands. I would have been acting like a cop. Basically because that's how you should act in those situations, I believe, because you don't know what that person has in the room behind them, next to them. And here's the thing, hands are what kill you, not faces, not really feet. Hands hold weapons, and you gotta watch people's hands. You gotta see their hands when you're in a situation you don't understand that may be a threat. And I called into Free Talk Live and said that, and people misunderstood. They basically thought I was saying, you know, someone posted on our site, I thought, you know, that they thought I said I would waste the guy. I did not say that, and I would not do that. I would be pointing a gun at him, screaming at him to show me his hands, and then he could explain to me how he came in the wrong house or whatever, you know, after he's face down and I can see his hands. I would not sit, and I would not, apologizing for being in your underwear at 4:30 in the morning in your own house? Fuck that, man. So yeah, basically, yeah. I ended up yesterday a centrist.
But then, again, Ian's house isn't just his house, right? I mean, it's the Keene Activity Center. There's always people that don't live there.
That's true, and I brought that up, and I called it a hippie crash pad, and Ian got a little upset and said, it's not a crash pad. But but it is a house where in the middle of the night, the doors are supposed to be locked, and there's supposed to be nobody in there. Whereas my house is different, where the doors are always locked, I'm always armed, and there is nobody in this house except my wife and I. And if there's somebody in the living room, there's no chance that a friend of mine let them in and forgot to tell me.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. So the context, I think, is a little bit different. I mean, when I was in college and I lived in an apartment with three other dudes and we all had our own separate bedroom and bathrooms, but we had a common area. If I saw somebody strange in the common area, I wouldn't pull my gun out. And if he was in my bedroom,
well,
I would.
So I was saying, you know, he asked on Free Talk Live, you know, if you want to call in and say what you would have done, do so. And I called in and said what I would have done. Now, what I would have done in Ian's situation, Ian owns a gun. What I would have done in Ian's situation, because the place was trashed. You have to remember that. The guy had wrecked the place, you know, knocked stuff over, was wearing Ian's clothes. You know, it was not even it was a friend of a friend. He was doing stuff he shouldn't be doing and violating Ian's property. In Ian's, if my house was set up like Ian's, where people can be there that, you know, could bring people, which I would never, ever do. I used to live like that. I'll never do that again. And I'm not saying he's wrong for doing it. I just have made the choice to never, ever do that again. What I would do is I have a gun on me all the time anyway. I wear a holster in the house. I would be standing there with a holstered gun on and I'd be like, who are you and what are you doing? And let me see your hands. I wouldn't be pulling the gun necessarily, but I'd be ready to. And I'd be, let me see your hands. And, you know, I mean, basically Ian went on the radio, on national radio, and said, I've got a bunch of stuff in my house. People know where my house is and I don't carry and I don't approach strangers with guns when they're in my house. That's crazy. Now, the weird thing is you and I talked the day before that about Ian and self-defense on the Leary episode, which, by the way, Timothy Leary's estate has tweeted, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I said to Ian, do you think I caused that? Because we're on the radio now in a station that reaches almost to Keene. And this kid, this 19-year-old, Ian kept calling him a kid. He's a 19-year-old male. That's not a kid. That's a guy, you know, kid is like, oh, that's cute. This is a guy that could kick your ass and could be holding a gun easily. He wasn't a kid. He was a man. So this man lived in Keene, it turned out. And Ian basically talked to him, got his email address and his phone number, and, you know, said he'd call him later when the guy's sober and try to get him to pay for the damage. But I don't know what I would have done after establishing the guy's not a threat, but I can absolutely say I wouldn't shoot him, but I wouldn't be unarmed in my underwear apologizing for being in my underwear, being like, hey dude, what's up? So I kind of feel like I'm the centrist between two people that I look up to and our peers of liberty, you know, Ian and Ben. Like, I'm looking at Ben going, that's going too far, dude. And I'm looking at Ian going, that's not going far enough, dude. It's just a weird position to find myself in all in one day.
I see. Well, then again, though, this whole discussion also highlights that the non-aggression principle, you know, something else about it. I think the fact is that you don't have a responsibility to defend your property with any specific type of force. You just have the right to, the ability to.
Well,
Ian made a choice, and at that point, it's his decision, and he didn't do anything wrong or immoral by not meeting the guy with the force that you deem appropriate.
I'm going to play this short clip. It's 90 seconds long. It's us the day before yesterday, the day before this happened, talking on our radio show. It's kind of weird timing.
All right.
Ian Freeman has a really interesting view on guns and self-defense, and it's interesting because it's not common. Most people are either like, well, you shouldn't own a gun. If someone bothers you, you call the police and they'll come fix it. You know, a lot of those people believe if you own a gun, you're part of the problem. Then there's people like us who own guns and are like, yeah, if somebody ran up into my house, I would shoot them because they would be a threat to me. And that is ethical. And in most states, and the states you and I live in, pretty much that's legal self-defense. If someone runs up into your house or steps to you with a knife, Ian owns a gun, doesn't carry it, is totally into gun ownership. All his friends walk around. A lot of his friends walk around open carrying in his house. He has no problem with it. He owns a gun, but he doesn't take it out and shoot it much. And he feels like violence is never the answer except in self-defense. And he says, even then, only in extreme cases. And I don't know what that means. And maybe we'd have to interview him. But he was talking about how, like, all humans are interconnected. It was kind of this Timothy Leary, like, kind of hippie idea of, like, you know, if you're shooting someone who's coming at you, you're shooting that. I don't know what he means by it. If someone came out with a knife, he'd try to talk him out of it or what. I would like to ask him. But it wasn't the usual, yeah, I carry a gun, and if someone comes at me, I'd shoot him. But it wasn't the, oh, you should never shoot any person because they're all wonderful. You know, it was a weird kind of centrist, or not even centrist, just not the usual view, and I liked it.
All right, so that's us the day before Ian got broken into, wondering what Ian would do if attacked. Now, to be clear, I said in it, I would shoot if someone ran up into my house. By run, that's a hip hop term for a home invasion. Now, this wasn't really a home invasion. This was a dude sitting in the house. And I want to make it clear, I wouldn't have shot the guy. If I hear my door break in, I'm shooting. I'm shooting at the door. I'm shooting at whatever's coming through that door. But this wasn't someone running up in his house, but it just seemed like weird timing to me. I don't think we caused this, and we didn't do anything irresponsible because I wasn't saying anything Ian hasn't said before on radio, on a lot more stations. So,
well, do you remember my response to that statement?
What was it?
It was that, you know, well, in AA, the way they tell you to people. Think of people like that is, you know, there are sick people and sometimes compassion is called for, you know, and again, it's not called for by something like the non-aggression principle. I think it's just called for by basic humanity. I think you should reserve force and violence while they are your right if you're being attacked. You know, just keep in mind that you don't have to respond with force or violence. I would reserve something like that for, you know, if things are really out of hand and it's absolutely necessary and it's me or them, I'm of course going to pick me.
Yeah, I just thought of a good title for this episode. It's Beyond the Non-Aggression Principle. And that doesn't mean outside the non-aggression principle. It means that's not the only...
In addition to.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Yep. Yep. So, yeah, let me play my call yesterday. Actually, my call on is kind of long. It's like 5 minutes. I'm not going to play it. And I've surmised it, what I said. But, yeah, and here's a reason one reason I would never shoot first and ask questions later in a situation, I don't want to shoot anybody. And I think that anybody who owns a gun and is like, I hope someone breaks into my house so I get to murder them.
Leaving
and get
their
away
doors unlocked.
Yeah. That's sickness, man. That is sickness. And there are people like that, but we're not like that. And the majority of gun holders, owners I've talked to are not like that. Here's why I would not shoot first and ask questions later in Ian's situation. When I was 16 or 17, I was 17, I was in love with this girl. It was my first girlfriend and first real girlfriend. And she was 18 and a half or 19. And she, you know, I was dating an older woman. And she had moved out of her parents' house and was staying with this lady who was in her mid-20s. The lady lived out in the sticks, like, you know, outside of Jamestown, New York, like 30 miles from me. And on break from my boarding school in the winter, on Christmas break, I called her up and she wanted to see me, and I wanted to see her, and I was going to go spend the night. And I hitchhiked, you know, it took about four rides to get about a mile from where she was. It was in the middle of nowhere. Finally got out, was trying to hitchhike. No cars were going by. And I start walking to her house, and it is freezing and it is windy, and I'm dressed for it kind of, but I'm starting to get to the point where I can't feel my toes or fingers. And I get to the house. I see her roommate's name on the mailbox, last name on the mailbox. I go and knock on the door. She's supposed to be there. There's no answer. I knock on the windows. I look in the windows. There's nobody in there. I'm starting to get to the point where it feels like it's a medical emergency, to where I'm going to be in a hospital getting my toes cut off. There's nobody there. There was a car in the driveway, like an old broken down car in the driveway. I opened it up. I looked in the glove box. There was a screwdriver. I took the screwdriver and I pried a window open and I climbed in the window and just started getting warm, you know, trying to not lose my toes, and, you know, yelled. Right. There was nobody in there. And I looked around. There was a shotgun shotgun shell press on the table. So it's definitely a house that had guns. Then there was a baby bassinet in the corner, and I knew that neither my girlfriend nor her roommate had a baby. And I'm like, okay, that's kind of weird. I look at the pile of unopened bills on the table, which I just bring up because it's like, you know, these people are angry probably. That might contribute to how they'd respond if they came home and found a stranger in their house, and they're gun owners, and they're, you know, they're having money problems, and there's some person in their house that they think is trying to rip them off probably. So I looked at this pile of mail on the table. And they were all to people who with the same last name as my roommate or my girlfriend's roommate, but none of them to her. And I realize immediately I'm in the wrong house of someone with the same last name on the same street. And this is where houses are like a quarter mile away. So I got the hell out of there, shut the window, put the screwdriver back. I'm sure they realized someone was there because, you know, it wasn't snowing, but there was snow on the ground. So there were boot tracks going up and back, you know, all around. But I split and I walked further up the road about a quarter mile and found the right house and went in and told them about it. And they're like, oh my God, you're lucky those people didn't come home. They're not my relatives. They have the same last name. They hate my fucking guts and they're evil people. And they probably would have shot you. You know, and if they'd come home and found me in there, I think they would have been totally in the right to point a gun at me and say, let me see your hands. Yeah. And then I'll hear your story of the wrong house and we'll call the people up the street and find out if it's true. But, you know, and if I were those people and I found that guy in my house, I would have pointed a gun at him and, you know, called the neighbor and found out. Yeah. Okay. Maybe I believe that. All right. Get the fuck out of my house. Don't ever come back on my property. That's what would happen. So that's why I don't shoot first and ask questions later. And I think that actually happened to me. And I think it's a really good kind of a morality tale or, you know, instructive tale for what can happen that, you know, isn't what you think it is.
Yeah, and I think most of us have stories similar to that. I shared during the last show that me and my wife trespassed on somebody's land, you know, because we were lost hiking and we had to get to the parking lot. We could see our car. We just had to cross some barbed wire to get to it. Nobody shot us then. And, you know, in college, there was a moment when I was pretty wasted, and I went up two flights of stairs instead of three and opened what would have been my door. But, of course, it wasn't my door because I was a floor below where my apartment was. it was. And I got all the way into the bedroom where there was a girl in my bed. And I was like, lucky me. And then I realized, oh, no, this is not my apartment. And yeah, if her dad had given her a little Derringer and said, if somebody breaks into your room, use this. If she would have taken that advice, you know, I could have had some holes in me.
Yep. I also always, I have a lot more situational awareness than that girl had. My house is locked right now. I'm in it and it's locked. So nobody is going to wander into my house unless they're using burglary tools or force, which in that case, it's a different situation than they're in the wrong house. And I think that good locks make good neighbors and good fences make good neighbors.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. So, yeah, man, just keep that in mind. Mistakes can happen.
Yeah.
You know, if you have to use deadly force and you're within your rights within the non-aggression principle to do so, then I don't think anybody is going to question you after the fact, except for the state. Reasonable person, I'll say. But, you know, keep in mind that if you do jump the gun and things are more heated than they need to be, you know, that will be remembered.
Yep. And we're going to go to the market and come back with more on Beyond the Non-Aggression Principle with the Freedom Fiends.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and Anarchy Gumbo and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many Liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
So the Freedom Fiends are looking for one or two more admins for our Facebook presences. If you're interested, it doesn't pay, but it does give you an instant audience to be able to post stuff and get your thoughts out there within certain Feeniac parameters. And basically, I'm just looking for people who are on the internet a lot of the time who can repost stuff that we send to them, because it's a long story, but I'm not on Facebook. I have given myself a cease and desist order from there, but it's hard to get the guys who are doing it for us to be around. It's not a bad thing. They're good guys. They're just busy. And so we need a couple more so it doesn't take me 24 hours to get something posted, or get it posted in the middle of the night when it should be posted during the day. So if you want a non-paying job opportunity with very little room for advancement, please write the Freedom Fiends at talkback@freedomfiends.com. That's talkback@freedomfoxtrotechoechonovembersierra.com. Worms.
Need to talk to people in a secure manner? Liberty Private Network sells phones that will work over any good internet connection and give you military-grade encryption for calls that cannot be tapped. Great for lawyers and clients, business people with trade secrets, or just ordinary folk who don't want their love talk spied on by some scumbag from the Central Scrutinizer. Call 516-TLK-SAFE on your non-secure phone and tell them the Freedom Fiends sent you. That's 516-TLK-SAFE.
So Nima V.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you have a new job. Yeah. You have a new job in television, huh?
Sort of, I guess.
And it pays better than your news job on television, and you can sleep at night.
Yeah, I can sleep at night. We'll see if it pays better. Ideally, it will.
What is this television industry job you have?
I'm a cable guy.
Yep. Awesome.
Yeah. It is awesome. I'm excited. I've got a blue collar, literally. My collar is blue. And I get to wear a tool belt. Yeah, ooh. And I get to have a 28-foot ladder and climb up telephone poles. It's fun.
Ooh. What safety precautions do you take when climbing on telephone poles?
Well, you got to have the proper ladder. The ladders are approved for this type of work. The ladder has hooks on it in case you need to hook it onto the line itself, because you can do what's called mid-span, which means instead of laying the ladder up against the pole itself, you hook it onto the line. It's not the funnest thing, that one, but you climb up it like that. You know, in case the tap is in the middle of the line. But precautions are you want 3 points of contact on the ladder at all times, you know, 2 feet on the ladder, not one in the air, and one hand on the ladder. Or if you're doing work with both hands, you've got this little belt with the strap on it, and you wrap that around the pole itself if you're on the pole, or you wrap it over the top of the line and then through the top of the ladder and then back around again to yourself if you're doing mid-span. So even if the ladder falls out from under you, then you're just hanging in the air to a pole or hanging from a power, or not a power line, but a cable line.
Nice.
Yeah.
Excellent.
And it's interesting. I did this, something similar to this, one summer in college where I was helping a guy install DirecTV. But I've never been in, you know, basically almost like my own contractor in something like this. And blue collar work, your colleagues, it's a little bit different than white collar or office jobs. And I kind of like it. People are plain spoken and honest, and everything's not full of a bunch of silly buzzwords, although there is tons of jargon and acronyms and stuff that people throw around and don't know what they mean. But yeah, it's something I'd always wanted to do something like this for a little bit, and we'll see how it plays out.
Excellent. Yep. We've had 13 shares.
And people from all walks of life, too, as coworkers. The guy I was shadowing today actually used to be a physician's assistant until he lost his license because he didn't work for 6 months because he was taking care of his sick kid.
Wow.
And the state will take your license away for that. And so now he's a cable guy. And his whole story, you know, the whole physician's assistant thing kind of is really an interesting study to me when you're anti-state, because basically these are people that can do pretty much everything a doctor can do. They have 2 years less school, but they try to learn pretty much all the same stuff. They just learn it at a faster rate. So you could even argue that they're probably quicker on their feet, or at least harder working than regular doctors. But they don't get all the same benefits as doctors. And of course, they don't get the fancy title that doctors seem to think is so important. And they can start their own practices in some cases, but they have to have a supervising doctor. And this might be somebody that never steps foot in the practice. It's just somebody they have to get their special permission from the state to say, oh, well, look, this is my supervisor. And the guy may never step foot in your office, but because you've got his name signed to a piece of paper, the state will grant that. Yeah.
Does it be useful in scenarios where you can't go to a doctor? You know, I know a lot of times, like, extra legal people like the mafia or like bikers or people who engage in, you know, sometimes in violent things, but sometimes in nonviolent things that end up in violence, like the drug trade, can't go to a hospital or they'll end up in jail. So they often work with, you know, people with medical training that aren't doctors and aren't as likely to turn them in, like, you know, disgraced. I'm not saying that guy does it. I'm saying, like, disgraced, you know, or like license revoked physician's assistants, nurses, or veterinarians.
Yeah.
Agorism,
well,
man.
It just was interesting to me because I asked him about the history of that. You know, like, why is there this distinction between a physician's assistant and a doctor? And the way he told it, and I haven't verified this at all, was it had to do with the 60s, and I'm guessing the Vietnam War, because he just said the war, but I can't think of any other war, that they couldn't get enough doctors out of medical school quick enough to treat all the people dying and being maimed by American foreign policy. So somebody had the bright idea to have this separate designation. We'll get them through school quicker, and then we can send them out to, you know, save the lives of the people that are being murdered at our behest. Really interesting thing, you know, because the market sans the state would have just taken care of this. You know, there would have just been schools that offer quicker programs, and there wouldn't be a licensure system or board or centrally planned thing to have a committee together to decide this. Somebody would just try it, and if people liked the graduates, they would keep going there.
You know, and I'll bet you that one of the things that has made this keep going is the non-free market of doctor licensure, because in my experience, and in talking to people who deal with doctors a lot as part of their living, like attorneys and paralegals and EMTs and things like that. A lot of doctors, not all of them, but a lot of doctors literally have a God complex. And I've encountered that. I talked about when I had a really bad flu and went to the doctor and told her I had a flu. And she's like, no, you have bronchitis. Antibiotics aren't going to, whatever I, or, you know, I said I had bronchitis, whatever it was. Like she said I was wrong. And then begrudgingly gave me what I asked for, and it fixed it, even though she said, this won't do anything. You know, and I think doctors probably really like the idea of someone they can push around. It's not a nurse that, you know, you're my assistant. You're my slave. So, yeah, maybe, maybe. So we have 13 shares already of the buy sheep for sheep on sheep, which I'm going to use today for, I'd be good for beyond the title of this episode, Beyond the Non-Aggression Principle. And then the thing about how the Constitution's written on sheep. Yep.
We have another guy that's a contractor there. That's a Afghan war veteran, and he got out, and he's really glad he got out. And he told us stories about how corrupt everything over there, and how even though he's a soldier, he's come to realize more than anything that politicians are all the same. They're all just in it for the money. They don't care about any greater good or anything that they sell to the general public. And he told some war stories, but it wasn't from the sense that, you know, these people are subhuman and this gook tried to murder me, so I murdered him back. He did tell a story of himself getting shot, but the way he told it was, you know, I was trying to disarm a bomb, because that's what this guy did. He was like the Hurt Locker guy. He was a bomb disarmer. And some little kid told him, gave him a hint about a bomb at this one house. He went to disarm it, and an old guy just came from like the back where the shed was with a 20-gauge shotgun that looked like it was of Russian make from back in the day, and just blasted the guy, the contractor who's telling the story. And it was birdshot, so he survived and he was okay. But his fellow soldiers just shredded the guy, you know, just tore him to bits. The guy who shot the contractor with the shotgun tore him to bits. And the contractor guy says, you know, he was probably just defending his house. You know, I probably would have done the same thing if I saw some foreign army by my house snooping around, you know?
And yeah, like, man.
Who's the bad guy there? The bad guy there is the state, you know? Because the guys shooting back, I mean, of course they're going to shoot back. They're not the bad guys necessarily. And the guy shooting, he was shooting at people invading his home. He's not the bad guy either.
You know who the bad guy? You know who the bad guy is? Is Nancy Pelosi. And that's one of the things about the brave new government we have. It's like they say that they're being fairer and better, and they do things like, all right, the man isn't always going to be a man now. It can be a woman. So Nancy Pelosi is a bad guy, and she recently got booed at a progressive, you know, liberal event while damning Snowden and praising the NSA. Now, I think that's an interesting almost turning point of the state ain't working. When Nancy, who is a god to these people, gets booed by her people, and booed rightly for criticizing Snowden and for defending the actions of the NSA. What do you think about that?
Yep. And not just Pelosi, but Feinstein. On one of the clips that's going around of Glenn Greenwald taking down the MSNBC Morning Joe folks a few pegs, there's a clip of Feinstein sitting with some government goon. I can't remember if he's a lawmaker or some cabinet-level dude. But he was just crying bloody murder about Snowden and saying that he needs to be prosecuted. And Dianne Feinstein is basically like, yeah, I agree. I agree. I'm supposed to be some sort of oppositional force, but in no way, shape, or form am I. Is basically what Dianne Feinstein said.
Yeah.
So yeah, man. I guess it's just further evidence that once a party's in power, they're going to be conservative because they're going to be conserving their own power. At that point, it becomes in their best interest to further the power of the state because they are the state. They're at the helm of it.
I think that people have a lot of blame in the fact that there's no privacy anymore, not just for putting up with it, but for like bending over backwards to comply with it. I saw a really interesting and egregious attempt by a corporation, not by a government, at getting information that they shouldn't have yesterday. There's this pretty cool show called Under the Dome. Do you know about it? It's a Stephen King series.
No.
It's basically... The Simpsons movie is partly based on this. It's basically this dome appears over this town. Just like nobody knows what it is, where it came from. It cuts people in half when it drops down. You can't see it. It's completely transparent. And, you know, you, if you run your car into it, your car crashes like you hit a brick wall. And suddenly this town has to deal with they're under a dome. So, and it turns out, you know, spoiler alert, come on, it's an old book by Stephen King. Aliens put it there. And I'm hoping that that's the technology. Aliens will bring the fiends when they hear us from space. They'll give us domes that the government can't get through.
Who would you put under a dome? Oh, is that it? Okay. So it'll be domes to protect us.
Me, my wife.
For our own good, Michael.
Me, my wife, and a bunch of women, probably. Yeah. Okay. So I don't know how my wife would feel about that, but that'd be my plan, and I'd say it in front of her. And she'd be like, she wouldn't be quite like G. Gordon Liddy's wife would be when he said things like that. But, you know, that's our history, and that's how it goes. But so under the dome, my wife is not a social networking kind of person. She hates it. She calls tweeting twatting and makes fun of it. She understands why I do it, because it promotes what I do, and it's a function of me having a social life without having to leave the nest. And she'd rather I'm sitting next to her chatting to strangers than she doesn't know where I am when she comes home, which is how a lot of people are. So, and I like it. It's not like she makes me do that. I don't want to go do things. So, but she does like, she likes to shop online, and she also likes to go online and read about things she likes. And she loves Stephen King books, and we watched the first episode of this yesterday. She dug it, and she went to read about the show, about the series. You go to the site, underthedome.com. The first thing that pops up is a thing that says, please enter your name, home address, and zip code. For no apparent return. It doesn't say to sign up for prizes. It doesn't say to join our social network. It just pops up and says, please enter your home address, name, and zip code. And I'm like, who the fuck do they think they are, man? And I'm sure thousands, if not millions, of people did that yesterday when they went to that site. And who in their right mind would do that? What do you get? Are they going to send a dome to you? What is it for, man? I can't believe the audacity. I mean, I could see asking for your name and zip code, but your home address, man.
But again, your wife didn't do that, did she? She just clicked away, right?
No, they'll just ask the NSA. Because it's CBS, man.
Well, right. That's the story now, right? Is the NSA, it's not just them being internal with it. It's the complex, as we like to call it. We stole it from some other person. But yeah, they not only keep your information, but they share it with other agencies. They share it with other non-governmental agencies like Stratfor. And Stratfor will go and ask for something, and the NSA will give it to them, and vice versa, man. It's just one whole conglomerate of corporate interests and state interests conspiring, there's your conspiracy theory, to screw you.
I didn't even know what Stratfor was until somebody posted something kind of wonky on the Fiend site, remember? I mean, they seemed like they were a friend, but or wanted to seem like one, but there was something wonky about them, and I looked up their email address, and it came up on a a list of people that do business with Stratfor, which is very strange. It's an evil organization that we don't even know what it does, and they had something to do with the NATO airstrikes on Kosovo, and it's a private organization. You know, it's a company, but they make stuff for the military, and they're really weird, man. They're really weird. So actually, they were hacked in 2011 by Anonymous, who published all their data. That's probably what I found when I searched this guy's email address. Because I'm like, why would a secret organization, secret corporation list their clients? But that's probably what this was.
Well, and I'm not sure if it's the same case, but it might have been. But I think it was Stratfor. And this guy, who's just a sort of blogger, reposted it and put it on some kind of dump, you know, centrally located dump site to where anybody could access it. And in the leak or the hack was a bunch of people's credit cards information. And so then the feds came after the guy and said, well, we're going to get you for credit card fraud now. Now, that wasn't the main beef they had with them. Yeah. It was just something they could do, a tool in their arsenal, because that's all laws are and regulations are to the state, is another weapon in their arsenal to attack people that they don't like or that rub them the wrong way.
Yeah. And they're in Austin. I think you should go interview them.
Oh, okay. I'd do that.
I just went to their website, and it says Stratford, geopolitical intelligence, economic, political, and military strategy forecasting. And geolocation they do too. So basically, I just looked at their website, so now they're searching me and looking at me, cross-referencing things.
Huh.
So I have a segue for you, since we were talking about CBS, who does Under the Dome, that movie. CBS, man, Edward R. Murrow. I'm really enamored with this cat, and I got a picture of him up next to my list. You know, I wanted to put a bit. He's the guy who there's a movie based on him. It's called Good Night and Good Luck. And that was his tagline when he signed off on the news in the 40s. And he was basically the first investigative journalism and then got fired for going too far with investigative journalism and then ended up working for the government, which is what happens. But he's the guy that brought down Joe McCarthy, the senator who was trying to rout out communists in America, which is kind of ironic because now there are actual communists in the government in America and they're open about it. People like Van Jones, I guess he got driven out of the government by Glenn Beck. But yeah, there's people in there. So he's a good guy, man. And you learned about him in journalism school, right?
Yeah, I sure did. Mostly what we learned, because I was in the TV section of the school, the broadcast sequence, most of what we learned was sort of his pioneering of the modern format of TV broadcast. And basically...
Of what? You dropped out for a sec.
Of TV broadcast news. So he was doing, I don't know if they were look lives or they were actual lives, but the concept of having somebody in another part of the world reporting back to you information about, you know, a war or some foreign government and what's going on or protests and talking back to the anchor. That was his idea, you know, I think. That was kind of...
Yeah, it was.
And so the way you see TV now is pretty much his invention. The format again, not the content.
Yeah, but the content of investigative journalism, he was the first hard-hitting electronic journalist, radio and TV, and literally like brought down he basically, you know, they say that the three estates, the executive, the judicial, and the what's the other friggin' thing? I forget. I don't even care.
No, I don't think four estates are correspondent to the three branches of government. I thought it was like a French conception. It was like the king, the church, the law, like the legislature, and the media.
Okay, well now it is sometimes said to be the fourth branch of government to keep the government in check, but it doesn't do that anymore. But it used to, and now the internet does that more or less, and independent journalists like the fiends. Yeah. And we want to talk about the journalist who won the same award you won in Wyoming and what happened to him. But first, let's finish with a real journalist, Murrow. Edward R. Murrow did this whole series. He used to do on CBS TV News in the 40s. He used to do this thing. It was like 3 minutes, 5 minutes at the end of the news. And he started doing really hard-hitting news, and he started going after this out of control congressman, if there's such a thing. Now they're all out of control, but he really did put a damper on things. I mean, they were ramping it up like Nazi Germany in America, to where they were, you know, they'd kicked some guy out of the Air Force because his dad had read a newspaper from Kosovo or something. You know, they were basically like, if your family even looks at something communist, we're going to go after you. And he was bringing people before Congress and saying, are you now, or have you ever been a member of the Communist Party? And like, even people who weren't just being brought before Congress, they were losing their jobs. He was really screwing up people's lives. He's also, we're talking about McCarthy.
It's so funny because it completely mirrors the horrors that were going on in the Soviet Union. I mean, not as bad. I don't think they were taking people out to the gulag. But, you know, in the Soviet Union, you could be thrown in prison or at the gulag or shot for wrecking or doing things to halt the progress of the party and society as they conceived of it.
Or so, you could be put in
McCarthy was...
McCarthy was... Go ahead. No, you hang up.
He's a freaking hypocrite, man. He's a hypocrite.
Yeah.
How are you going to be anti-communist when you're using the same tactics that apparently scare you so much?
Yeah. You know, I didn't extrapolate and finish a thought yesterday. When I listened to it back, I noticed this. I was talking about how the Red Army faction did a bunch of bombings in Germany, and it led to more government, not less government. Less government was their goal. Or actually a different government. They were communist and they didn't like the German Democratic government and wanted a communist government, but it didn't lead to anything what they wanted. It led to more of the same government. And here's what I meant by that. Germany, ever since Hitler, has had a really bad taste in their mouth about anything that looks like Hitler. Like right now, there are people marching in the street in Berlin with signs with Obama's face that say Stasi 2.0. They are really upset about what he's doing because he's acting like the German soldiers and like the Nazi state. And they remember that. And Germany, you know, after Hitler, they said, we will never have checkpoints. We will never search people on the street. They didn't even need to write down a Fourth Amendment. They were just like, that'll never happen, man. And when Red Army factions started blowing shit up and killing people, they locked down streets everywhere and started searching every car. And it horrified Germans.
Boston.
It horrified Germans even more than the bombings in some way. It was like, this looks like Hitler, you know, so it led to more government. And that's what happens. And I really love Edward R. Murrow, and he really went to bat for inventing journalism. He also inadvertently invented the Saturday or Sunday afternoon news, 1 hour news show, or whatever day of the week you want to do it, the 1 hour news show. They used to have the news, but they didn't have the, okay, we're going to have a panel discussion like all the shows they have now everywhere. And that was invented because CBS didn't like what Murrow was doing because it was harming advertising on the evening news, which was a big expensive ad spot show. So what they did was they didn't want to fire him because they wanted to look like they supported free speech and this new kind of journalism. So they said, you're off the evening news. We're going to give you an hour, a full hour just to yourself to do whatever you want on Sunday afternoons when everyone's out, you know, having a barbecue after church and not looking at the TV. So yep.
Right, right. Although modern Sunday talk show circuit is not really a paragon of real journalism anymore now, is it?
No. And then
although it is informative to see what the powerful want us all to think and what the powerful want to do next.
Yeah, and then Murrow ended up working for the U.S. Information Service, which is a branch of the government, which is basically propaganda through the news and, you know, to other countries and in America to give a good face to America. So that's what they do a lot of times is, you know, they co-opt you. That's how they stop you from ranting is they say, hey, we'll give you a lot more money and total creative control within our confines in our system. So they do that with hackers. They bust hackers and they say, you can go to federal pound me in the ass prison for 20 years, or you can come work for us and make $100,000 a year and have full dental and health benefits. You know, most hackers go, cool, I get to be a spook far out.
Although, yeah, exactly. Murrow wasn't a practical anarchist. You know, he was at his heart a statist, so I guess he took the job and, you know, maybe it made him feel good. I don't know.
Well, yeah, because the first thing he exposed was that the government had kicked out some brave Air Force guy for his dad maybe being a communist. You know, he's basically like, how dare you take away this great statist job this young man has because of what his family did, which is not really fighting the full fight, but within what he could do and when he did it, he was great. And I have a picture of him from before he was on TV, when he's on radio, in front of this big, huge honking ribbon mic in his tie and his slick down hair and his weird little skinny face, sitting in front of a CBS ribbon microphone. And I hung it up on my corkboard, and I didn't want to just hang it up and be like, oh, that's my radio pinup boy. Ooh, it's a great man. So what I did, and not that anyone ever comes in my studio, just for me, I didn't want it to look like that. So I put it right next to my list of words you can't say on radio. Piss, shit, fuck, cunt, tits, cock, dicks, pussy, asshole, motherfucker, cocksucker. Because because Murrow never said those words, and he didn't have to make the difference he did. And with that, we're going to go to the market.
Oh, I have one more point about Murrow.
Okay.
Yeah, okay, yeah. And it, we don't have hard breaks, so I can talk about it. Yeah. So the other interesting thing is the way we learned it in J school was the reason he ended up being forced out of CBS was because he was investigating Alcoa, which was a huge sponsor, and of course they threatened to pool their ad money. But not only that, but according to the wiki page, he was also threatened by quiz show TV that was taking the nation by storm. What was it? The $64,000 pyramid. So in two ways there, you can see through those two ways that it was pretty much the market that forced him out.
It was bread and circus.
It wasn't necessarily.
It was bread and circus.
Yeah. it wasn't state power necessarily forcing him out directly, maybe indirectly, because you could argue that, you know, state power keeps people dumb through public schools and wanting to watch things like
well, yeah, it wasn't the market
question.
It was the market of sheep to sheep, from sheep by sheep on sheep to sheep.
exactly. And it was really discouraging to me realizing this was my senior year of journalism school. It was one of the things that kind of first gave me pause that, hey, maybe, you know, the normal channels of media isn't the safest place for the truth. And, you know, I learned more and more about that through real world experiences. I guess I had to learn it for myself. But, you know, the cool thing that I can take away from that is there's two things. One, Ben Stone's concept that what you have to do, the main fight, is changing it to where there's no market. There's no longer a market for the state, or that there's more of a market for liberty and the lack of a state and freedom than there is for the state. You know, that's the first thing, because if there were people that, you know, wanted to see real truth instead of game shows, Murrow might have kept his slot. If there were people that would want to see Murrow despite what Alcoa was doing and threatening, he could still have a spot. And the other thing is, we don't need to worry about those kinds of things necessarily. If we want to speak the truth to as many anybody in the world who can hear it, that's what we're doing right now. You just buy microphones and a computer and talk. That's it.
Yeah, and I think that the mainstream media, even though they can make some great points occasionally with people like Murrow, it doesn't really change much. You really need the alternative media to do that, because it's unfiltered. It's not dependent on advertising. I've had several people tell me they like this Wednesday show better than they like our radio shows. They like our radio shows and they listen to them, but they like this show a lot better because we are more unrestrained. You know, a really good example I saw of mainstream media doing it right within the statism paradigm was there was a piece on Jay Leno where, you know, they go out on the street and they ask people questions and show how dumb people are. And there was one where they went out and they had pictures of some of the Supreme Court justices, and almost nobody knew who any of them were. Maybe somebody knew who Kagan were because she'd been put in that week or something, but nobody knew who any of them were. Like, who do you know, this judge, you know, this judge, but everybody recognized a picture of Judge Judy, you know, from the TV show where some ex-judge yells at people who can't run their lives and tells them how to run their lives. So, you know, yeah. I mean, that's the best you can expect usually on mainstream media. That's a really good bit. I really enjoyed that, but that didn't change anything. It doesn't change the fact that people are stupid and would rather watch game shows than reality or follow real news. And, you know, why is there even a Supreme Court? And why is it so corrupt if there is one,
right?
You know?
Well, yeah, see, that's my point too, is, you know, in a world, in a free society, people wouldn't be considered stupid if they didn't know what was going on in some silly thing like the state or the federal government, because there wouldn't be one, you know? I don't know, man. I just don't really see a need for it. But now in our current world, if you don't know what they're doing to screw you, you're going to get screwed harder than those who do know what they're doing to screw you.
Yeah, it's like I said on my buy sheep, for sheep, on sheep meme. Ben Stone actually came up with that line, but I came up with the connection that the Constitution is actually written on sheep. And I looked it up on a U.S. government site. It was debunking the idea that it was written on hemp. It was like a Q&A on archive.gov. Yeah. And they're like, no, drafts of it were written on hemp, but the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence, and the Articles of Confederation were all written on parchment, because it's more of an archival paper for documents you want to stick around for a while than hemp.
Right.
Than hemp. And it is literally treated sheepskin. So the Constitution is written on sheep. And I told Ben that, and he said, buy sheep, for sheep, on sheep. And we're making buttons of that. But the whole meme I made, it explains that. And then at the bottom says, written rights can be taken away, but you have rights in you that cannot be taken away, and they don't need to be written down on sheep. And with that, we're going to go to the market.
Hi, I'm Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends, and like you, I'm concerned with privacy on the internet. The electronic police state is strangling our previous protections, and the central scrutinizer is trying to squint into all areas of our lives. That's why smart people surf the net with a VPN or virtual private network. I use a VPN from Bola VPN. Bola VPN has your utmost security in mind and will allow you to surf, email, and do other computing tasks without leaving a trail of breadcrumbs across the internet. Unlike many other VPN providers, Bola VPN doesn't log traffic. With Bola VPN, you can change your apparent location or disappear completely. Bola VPN has been around since 2007, which is OG in the VPN world. Bola VPN is easy to install and configure. Best of all, it can be had for less than 25 cents a day, which is a small price to pay for this much security. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them through the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Howdy, I'm Ben Stone from the Bad Quaker Podcast. I'll teach you the difference between the government and the state, why the government is nothing without the state, and how to dissolve the state while remaining peaceful and even calm. I knew the state was a losing proposition decades before that was cool. Check out the Bad Quaker Podcast at badquaker.com. We have a forum and it's got gardening tips. That's BADQUAKER.com.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get State Speech is Hate Speech, Anarchy Gumbo, Guns and Weed, and 2 designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 5 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons. When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
So I have another theory about the break-in at Ian's house that I ran by Ian. He doesn't believe. But what if the reason that this kid broke in was to, what if he's an FBI plant and he went there to bug Ian's house and computers?
Maybe. I mean, I guess you could put like a key logger on it. That would be different. But I don't know, man. The NSA can already hear your calls and read your emails, figure out what porn sites you're going to. It seems like it'd be a lot of effort.
Well, Ian read the guy. The guy played with Ian's computer and went to a bunch of sites. He looked at some Tupac videos and looked at his mother's face, the kid's mother's Facebook page. So he's a mama's boy, like, hey, mom, I'm breaking into someone's house. How are you? Looked at a bunch of chicks on Facebook and looked at some more hip hop videos on the YouTubes. But, you know, I mean, it sounds far-fetched and conspiratorial, but we know that the FBI has tried to get someone to wear a wire into Ian's house. So it's not that far-fetched. It could be, you know,
yeah.
Be a good cover.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I mean, the NSA can't listen in on personal conversations between two warm bodies in one house.
Yet.
Yeah, so yeah, maybe that was it. Maybe he's putting some bugs. I don't know, man. I don't know.
Well, the NSA can, actually. The NSA has been able to for several years. The government has been able to tap your landline or cell phone and listen to what's going on in the room without you making a call. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that. Is that where are you confirming that from? I guess
internet. It's true, man. Internet. Alex Jones said it. It's true. It's got to be.
Well, he also says that your cable box will listen in on you. That there's microphones in the Scientific Atlantic DVR boxes.
He said that about a year ago, and people thought he was nuts. And then they came out with the Xbox that it's a feature, not a bug or hidden, that it watches you and it finds you if too many people are in your house.
Yeah. It sends ads to you if you can't find a Phillips head screwdriver and you're doing a do-it-yourself project in your living room. It'll send you ads. So you
Does
can
it
buy
really?
One real quick. No. but hey, I mean, I could imagine if it has the capability. I mean, that could be a feature.
Does it help you find it? Does it help you find a Phillips head screwdriver in an unoperational car when you're trying to break into a house to keep from freezing? Now that would be useful.
There you go.
Yeah. So I want to talk a little bit about art. because we do talk about art production on here.
Art.
Hi.
Yeah, every now and again.
My name's Art Production.
Art.
Yeah. Yep. I was talking to a friend of mine who's trying to make a documentary about Timothy Leary. It's my friend James, who lives in Australia. And one of the things he's running into a big problem with is that all of Leary's archives are owned by the New York Public Library. Now, I don't know how that came to be, but I'm assuming Leary died in 96. He was very forward looking and understood the internet, but it wasn't really to where it is now. You know, if I were old and dying of an incurable disease and wanted my stuff preserved, I wouldn't be doing much different than I'm doing now, because I'm already putting it all up on BitTorrent, which is and putting up Creative Commons. And, you know, it really goes back to that thing that another great Irishman, Tim O'Reilly, said. Leary was Irish-American, but Tim O'Reilly is actually from Ireland. Tim O'Reilly said, and let me find the exact quote because it's a really good one. Obscurity is a far greater threat to authors and creative artists than privacy. And I'm assuming that Leary or his estate figured, we want this stuff to last forever. Giving it to a famous library is the way that's been done in the past. And
well, so, also BitTorrent is the effective way. It's the same purpose that libraries sought to serve, right? I mean, you go to the library when you're broke, but you still need to consume the media.
Yeah.
You can just get it for free. You know, this is something the state said they could provide us, but they don't do it well, at least not as well as BitTorrent. And then the state goes after things like torrenting, calling it piracy.
Well, libraries are basically only used for two things now, and this is barely exaggerating. Libraries are homeless shelters, and they are for internet access for people who don't have it. So basically, yeah, internet.
So you go to the public library and go to BitTorrent and download some torrents flash drive.
I'm sure most libraries block torrenting. So you can't really use them. But yeah, I'm sure that in 96, in the nascent internet, you know, they figured the way to keep stuff around forever is to give it to the Public Library of New York, and they will respect it and keep it. And they are, but they're slowly digitizing some of it. They're putting rights restrictions on it. And Leary has become obscure, and we proved that, man. This great documentary that's been up for, you know, half a year has 150 hits. It actually has 220 now, which is because of us talking about it. So it's got 70 more hits. That's good. We helped get Leary out there a little more. You know, but I really think that if he'd hung on a few more years, instead of giving it to a library, he would have given it to the internet. He would have said, all right, you know, here's 10 people that love my stuff. I'm going to put them in charge of digitizing it all in one weekend and putting it up for free Creative Commons. You know, Creative Commons didn't exist, and BitTorrent didn't exist. So, and everyone didn't have the internet. Not a lot of people. I had the internet in 96, but did you, Nima?
I doubt it. No.
When did you get the internet?
Probably closer to 99 or 2000.
Yeah. So basically,
no, it would have been 98, because I remember using Napster when I was a freshman in high school.
That was your killer app. That's what got you to do it, isn't it?
Yeah. It was. It really was. Because I was really into Nirvana, and you couldn't find a lot of their catalog that wasn't on their albums.
Yeah.
And so, you know, me and my friends used to have a hobby of whenever we'd find a really good music shop, we'd go and try to get all the good obscure stuff, a lot of it Nirvana stuff, you know, handheld video recordings of live concerts and stuff like that. But on Napster, you could literally search any song and find it. You know, even songs that hadn't been released and there were no rights to, supposedly. And that's what I liked Napster for. And I thought the hubbub was completely silly, because I was downloading songs that I can't buy even if I wanted to.
But I'm sure there are people who have ownership in the Nirvana catalog who would feel they have ownership to the stuff, even if it's not on official records. I absolutely am sure of it.
Like Courtney Love.
Yeah. And like the publishing company that owns his stuff. Yeah. I am absolutely sure that they would try to come after you if you put up a website and put those songs up right now. I know they would.
Yep.
Man. And I don't know how the Leary estate feels about it. I think they're a little cooler than that, because they tweeted our radio show about it, and I'm assuming they listened to it. I mean, and you listen to it, and we played a clip of him, you know, kind of long clip, and we sure didn't ask for permission. So I think they get it, but, you know, maybe I could start a conversation with them and see if they can get their stuff back from the New York Public Library. And I know people that would digitize it, that would do the work.
Well, it's really interesting, because Leary was pretty visionary in a lot of ways, but not 100%. You know, I guess nobody can see into the future. Foresight is definitely nowhere near 2020 or 2050 even. But he was walking, there's a scene where he was walking through a video arcade and he was like, in the future, we will do everything through the video arcade. And he was right that everything would be digital and we would, you know, engineers and scientists would use computerized devices, but he was wrong that they would be in some central location like an arcade because nobody could afford them for their house.
Although he had a home computer and demonstrates it in that movie. I don't know that you saw that part.
No, I watched part 3 and 4. I don't know
that it was connected to the internet. He's writing a book on it. He has a computer with word processing software and he says, yeah, I'm writing my, oh, actually he does. He's cause he says, I'm writing my whole book on this. And when I'm done, I can send it through the wire to my publisher without having to use the mail or go there. So
he also was really big on the concept that young people would change the world, which I have talked about that a lot in the past. And he was saying, you know, this generation here, these baby boomers, they're it, and they're not going to have leaders. They're as a group, you know, individually. You know, almost in an anarchic sense, they're going to bring us organization, but they won't do it top down, was sort of what he was saying. But when I think of the baby boomers, I don't think they missed the message.
They missed the message. They got the freedom without the responsibility. And that's not me being some conservative going, they need responsibility, what comes great freedom. It's basically saying they got the illusion of that message without the actuality of it. They got the, hey, we can all have chromed robot turds and play video games and have the arcade in our pocket, but they didn't get the, and we don't need Democrats and Republicans telling us what we can look at on it or when. Or how we share it.
Why do you think that is? You think it's just they became the old ones, and so they became the ones in power, and they realized, hey, this state thing, it enriches us few that get to run it.
I think it's
resist the temptation.
No, I think it's because the Constitution is written by sheep for sheep on sheep. I'm kind of only half kidding, man. It's taught in schools, and everyone's taught some variation of you have to worship this state, you have to worship this system, you have to vote, and your vote counts. Oh, that leads us. Here's a segue. Way we got to talk about the statist who could not stop being a statist.
Oh yeah, this is great. Do you pronounce his last name Coke or is it Koch? Because is he Coke like a Coke brother?
I don't know, man. It's all right, but there's a guy from Cody, KODI, which is a radio station in Cody, Wyoming.
CODY,
who and what's his name?
I thought it was something K-O-C-H. I don't know how he pronounces it.
What's his first name?
Oh, man. You're going to make me look through my Gmail. All right. M-W-D Koch. Here we go. A statist who just won't quit. David Koch, hosts a show called Speak Your Peace, was arrested last Friday because he allegedly was voting in elections in Wyoming, but he's a convicted felon. He was convicted of first degree burglary and second degree theft when he lived in Alaska in 1993, but he has since admitted to voting in elections over the past couple of years, even after he took an oath in 2009 that he had never been convicted of a felony. Nobody knew about this. Nobody would have arrested him, but on his radio program, he had a caller who had apparently looked into his past and pressed him on the fact that he was voting. They came in and served him with whatever the state does when they find you are voting illegally.
Yep, which is just amazing to me. And there's a lot of on the local paper websites, there's a lot of defending of his actions, like, hey, come on, man, this, you know, his felony burglary was when he was a kid and it was a long time ago and it was in Alaska and his probation officer told him it was okay. And in Alaska, you're expunged when your sentence is done. And he didn't know or whatever. And it's like, he knew, apparently. It sounds like he knew. And it's really bizarre to me that people think that voting rights are so important that someone would commit a crime to vote. You know, like he thinks his vote counts so much that he
has to
vote.
Why do you think they make it a crime like that? Why do you think they have these distinctions that felons can't vote? I think it's exactly that. I think it's so that it makes voting an important privilege that you are privileged to do, and you must keep your nose clean so you can participate in this sacred sacrament.
And it's also saying, if you displease daddy, daddy's going to spend all your money without you having any say in where it's spent.
Right. Daddy's going to take your TV out of your room and he's going to use it to watch the game. You can't play your Atari.
Yeah. Basically. So
I could see that.
Fun thing about this is that the picture of him in the paper is him in front of his RE20 microphone in the studio looking proud and happy, holding up his Wyoming Association of Broadcasters Best Radio Show Award from 2012. Now, who else do we know who's won an award from the Wyoming Association of Broadcasters?
I actually have one. It's next to my SM58 microphone, not my RE20.
Yeah, you're
but
punk,
yeah, mine,
you're
mine
punk
was,
rock and shit. You ain't all corporate and shit like him.
Yeah, you got it. I got one of those. You know, in other markets, you get local Emmys, which are akin to what we call a Wabby if you're in the news media in Wyoming. I got one of those for best news piece in 2010. So you, can you say what you did?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
So I've been calling all these radio stations all around the country trying to get more Fiends affiliates. And one of the stations I called about a month ago was KODI. I called the program director there. Couldn't get him on the phone, left a message, sent him an email, told him about the Fiends, never heard back, sent him a follow-up email 2 weeks later. So when this story broke yesterday, I sent him an email again reminding him about the Fiends, and the subject line said, syndicated show you should carry originates in Wyoming, host has never been arrested. And then I went and in the body of the email told him about you and my co-host has won a Wyoming Association of Broadcasters Award. So the station has actually issued a statement saying they're not firing this guy. So I wasn't trying to take his job, but I was trying to get the attention of this program director. And he never wrote back. I'm assuming I have his attention and he's probably like, well, if you, but
yeah,
it was pretty funny. You know, I wrote it. The subject line said, show you should take and host has never been arrested.
Right. I hope they'll take us without firing him. I mean,
yeah,
we're not subscribers to crab mentality. We don't think we have to get ahead by pulling somebody else down or helping somebody else stay down. And I think it's good. I think it's good that the station is supporting this guy if they like him and they think that it's silly that he got arrested for this silly thing. I think it's silly that he's voting, but it's also silly that he's been arrested or charged with a crime for voting.
Hey, man, if you haven't been arrested for a felony or had to lie to Congress, I don't think you really belong on radio. I mean, G. Gordon Liddy served prison time in federal prison for felonies. And you know what's interesting? There's another talk show host that had kind of a similar background was Colonel Ollie North was a talk show host.
He didn't have his own show, though, did he?
Yes, he did.
He was just,
absolutely.
He did.
Absolutely.
Oh, I thought he was just a pundit that other people had on as a guest. He had his own show, really?
Yep.
Wow.
Yep. I have notes
That's
on that
horrible,
somewhere.
Man.
Yeah, Liddy was first, and then I think somebody else, you know, another network said, hey, we need a Liddy, and looked around and, you know.
We need a former goon.
Yeah. And I don't think Ollie was ever arrested, but he did testify before Congress and talked about doing things that were illegal, extra legal, and outside the Constitution, allegedly, for Reagan. So, man.
Yeah. Well, isn't that interesting that to the statist, it's always okay to break the law in furtherance of the state's power? Somebody like G. Gordon Liddy basically bragged about that and extolled the virtues of presidents he thought were great whenever they broke the law to acquire new land or murder some subhumans that were brown in some other part of the world. But whenever somebody breaks similar laws or other laws that decreases the power of the state or shows the state for what it is, like Snowden or Manning, it's exactly the opposite cries that you get, that they are evil, you know? So they're legal positivists when it serves them and not, you know, they don't hold to legal positivism when it increases their power. So they're not even legal positivists in the strict sense. They're just libido dominandi horny.
Yeah. I'm done if you're done. I don't have anything to add to that. And I just say to all those statists, well, fuck you. That's exactly. My worms for the day. If you got more, I got time. I'm not going anywhere.
I just want to say that one of the most genius things about Ben Stone and his recent speech was calling out the state for what it really is, a religion that has infected humanity and is at our own detriment. And, you know, people like Tom Woods have also brought this up, that, you know, when people call out libertarians as being cult-like, he says, really, we're the cultish ones? Do we have hymns and pledges of obedience? Do we have pictures of all our past leaders up that school children must be forced to look at and memorize what these people said? No. And then Ben Stone's thing about how, hey, if archaeologists dug up DC, what would they think? There's a giant obelisk pointing towards the sky. There's Lincoln on the throne that looks just like one of the Roman gods on his throne. There's all these giant statues of these great men. And then if you go, you know, to South Dakota, they're carved into a mountain. Like the Egyptian pharaohs, you know, what else are people supposed to think in the future? They're going to think of statism as a creepy god pharaoh like religion. And Lupe Fiasco also has touched on this in the last verse of his song Unforgivable Youth. His whole verse is about that. It's exactly Ben Stone's conception of I don't know if he got it from Ben Stone or if they even they probably came up with this independently, but this is exactly what he describes. It's archaeologists digging up Washington, D.C., and they're a bit confused at first, and they think that the society was peaceful, that poverty had been solved, that everything's organized, that everybody was well-behaved, that there was clean energy, because they're just looking at this microcosm. It's the soda straw thing, right? If all they see is D.C., which is the center of the empire, they think the whole society was good like that, instead of realizing that D.C. was sucking the wealth out of every other part of the empire.
Yeah.
And then at the end he goes, the religion's kind of complex, kind of hard to figure out, and this must be the temple, this white house.
Yeah, it's a nice picture, but you would not be able to go further than four blocks from the White House and the Capitol building to have that illusion. I don't know if Ben's ever been to D.C. or lived in D.C. I've lived in D.C. D.C. is right. Like a third world war zone, man, most outside of the Capitol area. It's if you looked at D.C. as a whole, you'd be like, wow, and people were starving and children walked around shooting each other and barefoot because they couldn't afford shoes.
When the Lupe thing, he says the pit 100 meters wide and 100 meters deep. So if it was 100 meters,
there you
then
go.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. Yep. Unless it happened last year at July 4th, and then you'd also have preserved Eddie Free screaming at the White House in front of a bunch of tourists, which was awesome.
Right. Well, and Molyneux also talks about your point that, you know, if you think of statism as the paragon of organizing society and keeping poverty out of society, then just look at D.C., you know, the center of the empire, the biggest government modified environment. And yeah, people are poor. There are guns, even though there's not supposed to be. There's violence. There's all the things the state says it can wash away from the world is right there in their midst.
Yep. Worms, man. Worms.
Worms, man.
All right.
And peace.
Hello, freedom fiends. It's your boy, Dean, from the U.S. Get the U.S. out my bloodstream. I owe me and that include endorphins. No one won't ask permission and I won't say please. Freedom fans, one fact that I gotta make clear.
The Freedom Fiends podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution Sharealike 3.0 license. Do what you want with it and spread it around. Tell two friends. Make copies. Email it to everyone you know. Go on the site and comment. This is a conversation. Three times a week, Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati share their own unique take on the way the world works and how to find your place in it. Available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com. Subscribe and tell two friends.
And remember, the only power they have is the power you allow them. We're not saying the Freedom Fiends are the one true path to anarchist liberation, but it's a good one. If you want to put your voluntarist money where your mouth is, consider making a donation to the Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post. Then make a one-time gift via PayPal or set up a monthly contribution of as little as $3. Giving to the Freedom Fiends helps advance education of horizontal liberation throughout the world. The Freedom Fiends. We work hard, so send us some money.